Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. Hey, in today's conversation, I'm sitting down with IJM's Regional President of North America, Melissa Russell, and we are talking all about modern-day slavery. And while we don't speak explicitly, there may be things that we say that little ears may question, so I wanted to give you a heads up that headphones might be best for this episode. Today we're talking all about modern-day slavery, how each of us can steward our own power, how to talk to our kids about their power, and the reality of slavery all around us and all around the world. I'm so excited to introduce you to Melissa, and as the president of IJM, we break down what IJM is, which it is International Justice Mission, and what they do and why they do it. I'm so excited to be involved with IJM and all that they do. I really, really believe in this mission, and I hope that you will enjoy this conversation. So friends, grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with Melissa Russell, who's the president of North America International Justice. Very exciting. If you don't know about IJM, you're going to hear about it today. It's something that I love and I'm super passionate about. And obviously Melissa is too. She's the president of North America. So, Melissa, how are you?
I'm great, Jeanette. I'm super, super happy to be here with you. Really excited to sit down and have coffee. I'm having espresso. So I've tried to, you know, just pace myself. I'll try not to speak too quickly, but I'm super excited to be with you.
Thank you so much for hanging out. You can totally tell when I've had too many cups of coffee because I will start to like stutter and my voice will get higher. So I've stopped at 2 this morning, which is great. It's fine. That's totally
fine. Your mind just gets working fast. That caffeine helps it out.
Get that extra push. So you're having a little cup of espresso right now, but when you're out and about, what do you order? What's your coffee order?
So I do espresso. And so if I go to a coffee shop, what I like to do, there's a lot of different ways you can order it. You can order like a macchiato made wet, which is like shots of espresso with a little bit of foam and steam added to it. I'm about to go through a very intricate coffee order that is going to make me sound like I'm an overly precious person. It's literally the only thing that I probably care so deeply about that gets done just right. So,
and you should know that I was a barista when my kids were babies. Like it was like my way out of the house. And so, so you're speaking my language. I love this. So don't
worry. So, but when you order a macchiato made wet, that can look like a latte at some places or like a really dry macchiato in others. So I order 2 to 3 shots of espresso with steamed milk, a little bit of steamed milk on the side. And I always say, please charge me for the macchiato, but there's a particular ratio of milk that I like in my espresso. So that's what I do. And I have an espresso machine at home, which is such a sweet luxury that my husband bought me years ago that I have one of those gratitude journals that have you wake up in the morning and say, you know, what are the 3 things that you're grateful for? And I like 90% of the time say my espresso machine. So, that's what I order. Espresso with steamed milk on the side. And then I do it just how I want it.
I love that. It's just, there's just something sweet and precious about a good cup of coffee.
So
coming from the podcaster who has done everything around coffee. We have a Breville espresso machine.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's super
fancy.
So fancy, but just like, it's just the greatest joy.
Yeah.
It sounds so silly, but I very often am like, thank you for good cups of coffee, God. Melissa, we talked a little bit about IJM, but can you tell us how you got started with IJM?
Yeah.
What IJM is, and we'll just start there. Let's just start with those 2 questions and then we'll go farther in.
Yeah. So IJM, if just super, super simply, the world's largest anti-slavery organization. And we work with communities around the world. We're primarily nationally led in the places where we work, to work alongside local governments, local law enforcement, to help slave owners and traffickers be held accountable to the law. And when we do that, you see a massive decrease in the number of children and women and families who are held in slavery. We also do gender-based violence, so sexual assault of women and girls, same thing, working alongside local communities to hold people accountable for those who abuse the most vulnerable. And we do that in police abuse of power as well in Kenya. And so I've been with IJM now almost 13 years. I'm like a month and a half shy of my 13-year anniversary, and have seen a tremendous amount of change, especially I would say in faith-based communities, in talking about justice and how that's a core component of who God calls his people to be. And it first honestly came to hear about IJM through my church. So our pastor talked about it in one of his sermons, and I looked it up. I went to IJM.org and read about IJM's work. And this was when we were still living in Texas, and gave like a $5 gift. We really just did not have a lot of money at the time. And so it felt like a sacrificial gift at the time, but gave that gift. That was my first act with IJM, which was over maybe 16 years ago. So been a donor with IJM for 16 years, but have been on staff for 13 years.
That's amazing. I think I first heard about IJM through the IF gathering.
Yeah.
The first one, I think it was the first IF gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems ignorant to me now, but I guess that was like what, 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm. In 2016, I think, was the year.
Okay.
There was maybe one other year that IF had happened, and we came in maybe just like a year after it started. I think 2016 was our first year to sponsor it.
It was just, like I said, it feels ignorant now, but to think of to hear you say like slave owners, it doesn't compute to mm-hmm. think of slave owners, except for the past slave owners with, you know, plantations and that devastating thing.
Sure.
To hear
here
slave owners.
And,
yeah. To hear that now, what does that term mean now? I mean, a person who owns people is what I think mm-hmm. it means, but what does that mean?
Yeah. So there is slavery that exists in every country around the world. Even there is still slavery here in the US, sex trafficking, particularly of minors. In the places where we work, slavery is against the law in all the places that we work. It's simply that law is not being enforced. Mm. And so where you see rampant slavery, and it's very much what you imagine it to be. So our casework in India, it's brutal labor, where a ton of physical, sexual, emotional abuse happens, 18-hour workdays in rice mills, brick kilns, rock quarries, and it's generational. So you are in slavery, you were born into slavery, your children will be in slavery, and you are owned wholly owned by another person for their profit and for their benefit. And it's not that this work can't get done. They can do this work by paying people a fair wage, but there is more money to be had in enslaving vulnerable populations. And so that's where we work, are places where the law is not being really enforced at all. And again, it's once you make the cost of doing business by trafficking in persons going to jail, you will see massive decline in the number of people being sold for profit, because you've made the cost of doing business that way too high.
Which is just insane. And I think what breaks my heart the most when I hear like what the human life is worth to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it chokes me up. Like, it makes me super uncomfortable. And I told you before, like having a daughter who was adopted from a vulnerable place.
Yeah.
Breaks my heart to think about like what could have happened, or what, especially since she's deaf. And so the cost of her life was very little in Africa, mm-hmm. in all reality, especially where she's from. And it devastates me because I have to think about that. Like, that was a thought process as we walked through our adoption. And it hurts so bad. So how do you cope with this day in, day out?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that question, because I think, especially when we're in the midst of a time like COVID, there's also, there's one thing to look at these issues and to take them on. It can also have an odd effect in how you approach your own personal suffering in a way that makes people feel guilty. Like, this can't be hard for me here because I'm not in a brick kiln or a rice mill. So let me tell you, as someone who looks at these things on a daily basis, how I hold them. And it truly is, I'll talk about it from a faith perspective, because again, that's what helps inform the way I look at the world. There is an infinite God who can hold the infinite pain that is present in all humanity. And he does not have to, he is not limited in his love or his affection or his concern or his redemption. And so he can hold the deepest of the depth, which is a child locked in sex trafficking and the things that you and I may struggle with in our own. And his love and compassion meets them exactly where they need to be. And it's never failing, and it's always available, and it's never intimate or he never has to make a trade-off on those things. And yeah. So I look at those things. I also know my own limitations. And so there are limits that I put in terms of even outside of work, the types of media I consume or stories I will pay attention to after having spent a whole day in looking at hard things. I don't do that necessarily outside of work. There are things that I have to counteract that by bringing me joy. But I honestly believe that if we're able to do the things in front of us that allow us to take action, and that looks like different things for different people to help fix the brokenness in the world, whether it's trafficking or hunger or medicine or all sorts of things, and then be present in the things that are just wonderful and life-giving without guilt is probably one of the main ways to go about that day in and day out work of looking at hard things. Yeah.
I love that. I love that you have boundaries around that, because I can only imagine if you let those boundaries slip, what that would do to your heart and mind. And I can, for me, I know it would just send me to bed. I would just have a hard time getting up. It would be really rough. Like thinking about like the what ifs, like what if Zoe didn't get rescued? What if Zoe had to live? And it's like, well, that didn't happen. So I have to rejoice in the fact that she is home and safe and good, and well-loved and taken care of. So I love that boundaries in place. And I think as we're talking about personal growth, I think boundaries is always an excellent way to start in our personal growth. And I know we're going to talk about leading in our communities as a way of personal growth, and how serving others is a way of personal growth. So let's dive into those things. When you started looking at IJM, mm-hmm. you started leading in a way. So how does partnering with IJM help us lead within our communities, or how can we lead within our communities with IJM?
Well, I think, so what's really wonderful when you talk about, and again, looking at things from a redemptive lens. Yeah. So there are just a lot of things that are broken in the world today. And we're not called to fix all of it. We're not called to carry that weight in our shoulders. Certainly that is God's weight to carry. But what we are called to do, and I love sort of for your listeners who come from like a Christian perspective that would be familiar with the fish and the loaves in the Bible, mm-hmm. of where Jesus does a miracle where he feeds 5,000 people, but what he takes is not food that in evidence could feed 5,000 people. It's some little boy's sack lunch of some fish and loaves, and that is given to Jesus, and Jesus blesses it and does the miracle and meets the need with what is perceived to be a very, very small, limited resource. So I think all around the world, people are bringing their fish and their loaves. And if you only look at it in terms of how could this accomplish this, like how could this fish feed this many, it's never going to make sense, but we are all given power to take action. And that will look different for each person. That could be giving, that can be becoming part of, especially as it pertains to IJM, helping with pushing our legislators and policy and investment to care for those around the world. But also in our own communities, justice is something that needs to be done in our own personal hearts, in our own families, in our churches, in our local communities. And it's not either or, it's both and. And so I would just like, I would say looking at, you know, who does God call us to be? What does God call us to care about? And pulling on that thread and taking the next step into step into step, both locally and globally, is a great place to start.
Absolutely. Oh man, I think that's such a good, like, that's just such a good thought process. Like, who does God call me to be and who does God call me mm-hmm. to care about? And I think that that can change season to season. You know, when, like, I keep using Zoe as an example, but when we were in the throes of our adoption process, we cared passionately about the orphaned. And then when she came home, it was, we cared passionately about orphan care as kids come into families. And when we care, like, so much now about the family care, because that first year is really hard.
Sure.
And so we care so much about, like, that first year as you join as a family. And so I think that there is that it changes seasonally, but also, like, our heart hasn't changed from that. Like,
we care about
the orphan and the family and all of that. So there's like this little seed that we care so much about that we want to see develop into something really beautiful. And I just love that God plants those seeds in our heart in a really, really neat way. You're talking about the loaves and fishes miracle. And one thing I love so much about it is I don't think the crowd knew the miracle was happening when it was happening. Like they just... The little boy maybe knew because he's like, yeah, I guess, like, here's my food. But the whole crowd was like, oh man, we're just so hungry. And the disciples were just passing around the food. They didn't know, maybe. I mean, it'll be a question I like get to sit and ask Jesus as to be like, did everybody know? Did they know what you were doing? And same as the wedding feast when Jesus turns the water to wine. Like, did anybody else know, or only the servants, that this was happening, that they were in the presence of like this amazing miracle that was going to change faith forever? And I wonder about those kids. They don't, or and the people who are trapped in slavery, they don't know that the miracle is coming. Mm-hmm. Like, but it is, because the seeds in our heart have been planted.
Right.
So I love that IJM doesn't give in, and that it starts within our own homes and it starts within our own communities, but mm-hmm. then those seeds get scattered all around the world. And I know that there's been an incredible stories. Is there a story with IJM that stands out to you the most as like, man, this was like a miracle? I mean, they're all miracles. When somebody gets rescued, it's a miracle, but is there one that stands out to you the most?
Yeah, I think the one that stands out to me the most right now, I think, especially because of the time that we're in, and everything is so digital, and I've been with IJM for so long, so I've been on the front end now of many of our offices being started or a new type of casework being started. And the one I think about is cyber sex trafficking of children. And so that is where, just for your listeners, it's where abuse is directed. So a child is placed in front of a web camera, but there's a live component of it, and the abuse of that child is directed. And there's a money exchange that happens, and it's all done virtually, but it's all done in real time. And it's super prevalent in the Philippines. And so when you think about the Philippines, IJM did this wonderful casework that was brothel based, meaning children who were in a physical place where they were, you know, customers would have to come to that. And we really worked with the Filipino government and saw the Gates Foundation had invested in our work and saw over 86% reduction of child sex trafficking in certain places after 7 years. And so it was really quite amazing and quite wonderful. But as internet and broadband started to expand into more rural areas to bring technology to children, especially in education, what it also brought was children into technology for abuse. And so I think about our client Cassie, who had that dream of studying in a big Filipino city, of going into one of the larger cities. She lived more in a more rural area, and someone came to the area who was a friend of the family and said, listen, you know, Cassie can come and she can have schooling and I'll help take care of her needs. And while that was true, you know, her parents did trust this person. And while that was true, she did get to go to school for a certain number of hours a day. In the evening, she was actually trafficked through cyber sex trafficking and was in that situation for years before IJM worked alongside local law enforcement, found out about her, did undercover investigations, removed her from that situation, and held her abuser accountable and her trafficker accountable. And when you see that change in Cassie, she's very much an empowered young woman. She is in school. She likes to tell her story because she wants people to own it and to claim it and to actually go help the other like thousands and thousands of children who are in that same circumstance. So I have seen something that was so dark and so ugly and just a total redemption for one individual girl who is now fighting on behalf of all the other thousands of children to have that same sort of redemption and to bring order to chaos. So again, as believers, like our call to bring order to chaos, few things more chaotic than that. So I love that story of Cassie. I love seeing what she's doing now. There's not much about that story that I don't love, actually.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Do you ever feel like you're alone? That God is so big and so far away? Do you feel like to follow God or God's will for your life, you have to change everything about yourself? My hope for you through this new book, It's Time for Jesus, is that you will finish it with a deeper friendship with God, that you will see him as someone who cares and loves so deeply for you. My hope for our time together is that you will use this book to learn, pray, and journal. Spending time daily with Jesus is something I've always tried to do. I love to journal, and I've left some space for you to do that each day as you write, doodle, pray, and hash some stuff out with God. I love being able to look back and see what God has done and how he has answered my prayers and how he has been there each step of the way. My hope for this new book, It's Time for Jesus, is that it will be a catalyst for your friendship with God, a book that you can look back on and know that he loves you just as you are, right where you are. My new book, It's Time for Jesus, is out now and is a 30-day devotional going through the beliefs of who we are and believing that God made us just the way we are for a reason. So go grab it, believe the truth of who you are, right where you are, with It's Time for Jesus. One thing I love about IJM is that y'all do like aftercare too, right? Like you, mm-hmm. you rescue and then there's like counseling and all of this stuff. So what does that look like on the other end? Because there's so much work and I feel like it's daunting when you mm-hmm. think about like all of those in slavery and all of those who are being hurt and everything. But I also love that there is one, there's rescue, and then with mm-hmm. rescue comes redemption, and y'all are a really big part of redemption.
We do. We have counselors, so there's, especially in our field work, we have investigators who help find people who are in vulnerable situations, particularly slavery. We have lawyers who help, will build the case. Again, it's all about accountability. So whether you're talking about police who abuse their power, they need to be held accountable, or if it's slave owners who are trafficking in children, they need to be held accountable, or people who rape children and women on their way to school or on their way home, like they need to be held accountable. So, you know, we have lawyers who do that. And then we have social workers, and they are trained in trauma-focused care. Now, one of the beautiful things is IJM, we know what we focus on. We also know that we have to partner with others to bring that holistic care. So we are not actually the providers of medical care. We don't own and run aftercare homes. We actually partner with local organizations, and some of them are larger organizations, to provide that. Our counselors do provide the trauma-focused care and also provide training for counselors in the places where our clients work, but we are one body, many parts, and we do a lot of bridge building and a lot of partnership with other organizations.
I love that. And I think that there's wisdom in doing one thing well, right? Mm-hmm. Like bringing accountability is what y'all do well. And then saying, okay, like we've done our part. Now we trust you to do your part. I think that's mm-hmm. just, I think there's something to be said there about like, I know what I do well. I can't do everything.
Right.
And while I can do many things, I can't do everything super, super awesomely.
Sure.
How can we serve with IJM? Like, I know you mentioned, donating money and sometimes time, but what does that look like? How can we serve with IJM?
Yeah, well, I would go to IJM.org. We have a lot of volunteer opportunities depending on where your listeners are in the communities where we're at. Again, I would say, especially in terms of one of the things that is most helpful, certainly I would say giving is extremely helpful because that's literally what sends the rescue. And within that is our Freedom Partner giving. And so that's the type of donor I am to IJM. I'm a Freedom Partner, which is a monthly gift. And again, that allows like continual rescue, continual care, continual counseling, because it's a multi-year initiative in terms of redeeming communities, but also providing holistic care that's needed. But in every community, there's an opportunity to volunteer. And a lot of this is helping to educate others on what does injustice look like around the world today and how can you get involved. And that's probably people using the influence they have in their homes, in their churches, in your communities. You're going to be able to reach people that IJM, you know, staff just won't be able to. And that's one of the most, I'd say one of our biggest needs is people becoming aware of issues and learning how to engage in them.
How do you talk about this with your kids? Like when you think about making this aware in our homes, like, I know we've talked about it with our kids because they are bigger. And I think you and I talked about that before, like having a little bit older kids is nice because those conversations happen a little bit more naturally. I think there was like the End It Movement Day, anti-slavery day. We watched a video with our kids from the Buttery Bros. We watched this video with our kids and then got to have the discussion of like, okay, so what does slavery look like now? And so how do you have that conversation with your kids and how do you encourage other families to have that conversation with their kids?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Certainly there's appropriate ways to talk about this for every age. And kids at even the youngest level, they know what a bully is. So they know what it is when someone abuses their power and they're quite, you know, passionate about it. And so, you know, certainly older siblings can abuse their power against younger, less powerful siblings. I mean, my kids are probably way over the amount of time I talk about how do you steward your power. But it's a great question. So I think kids automatically understand what a bully is. And you can talk about that in ways that become appropriate. And as they have gotten older, and they understand what it is that we do, they have been, you know, invited to more of our events or hearing more of our stories. And because so much a part of my job is leading storytelling teams, you know, I'll share with them the things that we're working on, but it's age appropriate. We also have started in the last few years to really create age appropriate sort of materials in our Freedom Partner program for this very thing, Jeanette, that you're asking for, so that families can share these stories. So we've got activity books and workbooks and anyway, that help put that in context for kids that's age appropriate.
I love that because I think you're right. We have to steward our power and our power right now is to make those aware. And my biggest goal, I tend to lean towards fear often, as just a person, a fearful person. We pray a lot about that. And so I don't ever want to be the mom that says, you have to be careful because I don't want you to be kidnapped or I don't want you to be taken. You know, I want to say like, hey, we just have to be mindful of our surroundings. We have to be just aware. And having talked to people who have seen, you know, firsthand abductions or anything like that, like, I don't want to lean into that with my kids because I don't want them to be fearful, but I want them to be aware. And then I also want them to be aware of like, why they're aware. So I love that. And I love the question, how do we steward our power? And that goes for everything. Like as a mom, as a wife, as a husband, my husband is the leader. How is he stewarding our family? Siblings, how are they stewarding their power over one another? I love that. And I even think about that as far as like, the influence we have on social media, whether we have a big audience or not, we are influencing others every way. So how are we using that power?
Oh, sure. I mean, think about middle school. Think about all the power that's held at middle school and how, I mean, even asking your middle schooler, you know, what is it like to steward your power on behalf of someone who's not on the inside, who's not the cool kid? You know, how can you be a good friend? What does that influence look like? I mean, power is everywhere at every level. So it's never too early to learn. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting how they see that. And then it's interesting how they see their teachers wielding their power.
Every level.
So interesting. I love that. Okay, I want to know, what is it time for in your life right now? We know that there's a season for everything. The Bible says season for everything under the sun. What is it season for in your life?
You know, I would say it's a season both for myself and a lot of people who I talk to and work with. It's a season to be kind. It's a season to be kind to myself and to others. And one of the things years and years and years ago, I had a therapist, well, not years and years, about 4 years ago, we had a tragedy inside of our organization. We had three of our own who fighting police brutality in Kenya, and we were taking cases to court, and following one of those court cases, my colleague, our client, and our driver were kidnapped, and they were tortured, and they were murdered in the line of seeking justice. And they were, by police who had power. And so that case is still ongoing. We're still pursuing justice in that case. But in that horrible, horrible tragedy, part of my job was leading all of our internal and external communications. So really being very close to what was happening. And I had this very interesting experience of total devastation, like true trauma, true secondary trauma, and also seeing how our team in Kenya like rose to the occasion to really leverage that on behalf of people that they had been fighting for, our communications team trying to communicate with our constituents. And I also had so much pride. So there was like this devastation and also this pride at the same time. And that was one of the things I struggled with the most, was I don't know how to reconcile how sad I am with how proud I am. And I don't, that those feel like conflicting emotions. And I had this therapist who said, you know, one of the things is we're multifaceted and multi-layered people, and all of your emotions get to sit at the table at the same time. So I'm going to say that again, because that's the main thing I would probably want to say for a season such as this, and especially your listeners, you're going to have more than one emotion, and you don't have to feel them one at a time. So you can be devastated and scared, and also really happy that you're working from home, or, you know, loving having your kids close, because then you have all these great conversations and they can totally be driving you crazy. Like all of those things, you don't have to just feel them one at a time. And I feel like that freedom, especially in a time such as this, to feel all your emotions at the same time, allows you to be kinder to yourself as you're trying to navigate new normals and new things. Because we just need a lot of patience, I think, to be able to do that. So I think it's a season for letting my emotions, all of them, sit at the table at the same time, so that I can be kinder to myself and kinder to people who are also, you know, there's a lot of people who are really struggling, and kindness is good.
Kindness goes a long way. I was just thinking while you're saying that, I think earlier in our conversation, you mentioned like some of our problems aren't the same problems that other people are facing. And yeah. I know I struggle so much with that when I think, well, this isn't a big deal to somebody who literally has to walk to find water.
Sure.
Like, but when we do that, when we discount our feelings or we discount our problems, we're not allowing ourselves to process that. And that's not kind. Like we're saying like, well, somebody else's problems are bigger. Yeah, they probably are. But that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt us the same.
Totally. And not only is it not being kind to ourselves, it's actually not healthy. And fundamentally, you actually won't be as effective at helping other people if in the same way you're feeling guilty about the good things in your life. Mm-hmm. Again, all of that gets to sit at the table at the same time. Yeah.
I love that there's a big push right now. I think because it's because of our mental health, but that both and. Like we can have grief and joy. We can wrestle with those feelings, and they can all, like, I love that. Like they can sit at the table and we can acknowledge each and every feeling.
Yeah.
My counselor was like, they just can't control you, Jeanette. Like you allow them the seat, but you don't have to allow them to control you. So I was like, oh, I don't.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
It's a tough one. It's something I wrestle with. But I love that. I love that it is, both and. I love that they get to sit at the table, because I'm learning that God actually created all of our feelings. He wants us to feel feelings, and he wants us to process them with him. And I think that's just been a really beautiful lesson that I've gotten to walk through, especially this year during COVID. But then also right now, as we hit election season and we see divisiveness all over the place, that's where I'm like, man, kindness just goes a long way. It really, really does.
Kindness and curiosity. Yeah.
Wouldn't the world be a great place if we allowed our curiosity to be accepted with, or if we met curiosity with kindness?
Yeah.
For everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So fun. Well, I enjoyed this conversation so much. I just want to encourage all of our friends and listeners to go check out IJM.org. Do some research on being a freedom fighter. That's a monthly donor, right? Like you can just, and is there levels of monthly donor? Like,
It's you can choose, honestly, any amount. You can choose any amount. We start at $24, but even if you gave $5, again, my first gift to IJM was a $5 gift. We were a peanut butter and jelly rice and beans family at the time. And you know, that's what our meals consisted of. And so I totally, you know, any gift makes a huge difference.
Did you have any idea then that your life would be this, at like, when you gave that $5, were you like, I hope that one day I get to work for
absolutely not not at all. And in fact, I would say that's probably a whole nother podcast about women and vocation and working. And I would say no, I didn't. And I was quite paralyzed. Even like reading, let's say, a People magazine, like the human interest stories in People magazine were too much for me. I can only read the first parts of, like, you know, so-and-so is at the market. Anything that had like some deep human element of pain to it, it was very hard. And the issue was I would feel paralyzed by it because I didn't know what I could do that would actually be meaningful. And so I'm quite empathetic, even when we're talking about our work, which is to say, listen, you don't have to take it all on. There are things that actually really move the needle. Becoming a freedom partner, giving actually sends rescue and counseling and restoration. Really, really, really. And it makes a difference. And so when people see hard things, but they don't think that they can do anything about them, that's so horribly paralyzing. And so I do think that there are things that we can do. And if we think about those fish and the loaves, do what you have in front of you. What is the power you have in front of you? And start to use that power and see how that moves things. And I think more opportunities and more power will come.
Yeah, man, I love that so much. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today and for encouraging our friends and listeners to do what they can with what they have, I think.
Yeah.
And sometimes that starts with $5 and a conversation around the dinner table.
That is exactly where it starts. That's perfectly said, Jeanette. Thank you. Yes. $5 and a conversation on the dinner table. I might start using that.
Please,
I like that. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks for having me.
This is so much fun. Thank you. I wanted to end today's conversation with just a couple thoughts from this episode. Who is God calling you to be? And who is God calling you to care for? How are you stewarding your power? How can you give back? And remember, it can be as simple as $5 and a conversation around the table. Let's start by being aware. I have a friend who says, eyes wide, light shine. It can be that simple. How are you stewarding your power? Let's be friends that empower others, helping bring order from chaos. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.